All right, let's go now to Kay. She's a first-time guest. And again, I'm going to try to – well, I'm just going to invite her on. Kay, welcome to the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Brandon. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. How do we say your last name?
Rubicek.
Rubicek. Well, I didn't get that anywhere close, but that's a beautiful. And you have a little bit of an accent as well. Tell us where you where were you born?
I was born in Australia, and I moved here to the U.S. 10 years ago now.
10 years ago. And I was reading in your bio that your family had to flee Australia because of socialism.
My family had to flee communism in so many countries, and I'm just concerned now that there's nowhere left to run to.
Wow.
So we need to protect the values that we have. Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, so tell us your story. I'll just give you the floor. I want to hear your story. I love history, and I don't like hearing from people like you that tell me things are repeating themselves in countries you fled where there's communism, but I do like history, and I do like hearing the clarion call from folks like you, because you have a unique perspective, and you have the firsthand experience of communism, and you can help us understand as Americans how it's being repackaged and offered up in America in a way that maybe people don't recognize. Can you speak to all that, please?
Absolutely. And you're right on the point there when you say things are being repackaged now, because when I tell my story to people, they say to me, well, this is a long time ago. Communism happened a long time ago. It doesn't exist anymore. It wasn't tried properly. It would be different the next time. It hasn't changed at all. And my family's three generations of experience and my own experience too, and what I'm seeing now just proves that even more. Although on the surface, things tend to look different, the fundamental ideology is exactly the same. And so my family escaped communism first in the 1920s when it started in Russia, when the Soviet communists took over Russia. My family were strong people of faith, both my grandparents on my father's side and my mother's side. And so they were faced with the situation of not only were they religious believers, they owned land. They had businesses, things that we take for granted and that we think we should have those rights to have. And so suddenly they were taken away. So think about it, you know, now, I mean, that was a long time ago, but sure, things were difficult before, but suddenly they had this whole oppressive regime came on and that became very violent. When they escaped for five, you know, my father's side, it took 5 years to travel by foot from one side of Russia down to safety. And they were being chased at times by the Soviet army. Mm. And there was bodies hanging in the trees, dead bodies hanging in the trees. And they were put there intentionally to scare people. So we're not seeing dead bodies in the trees in the US here, but we're intentionally being scared. It's the same tactic of creating fear and terror in society.
So,
and
like,
just using
different
ways.
Like, well, let's see, allowing the folks to loot and riot and burn in 2020 and doing nothing, which created a lot of fear and chaos, and then hoping maybe the government will step in and protect us. And so, therefore, we all agree to bigger government because we want things to go back to normal. Or, well, when that didn't work and the freedom movement kept marching forward, well, let's raid the home of a senior citizen whose wife's got cancer, Roger Stone, and intimidate people. And the freedom movement kept going forward. So let's raid the home of the 45th president of the United States in order to intimidate the people. Let's get 87,000 IRS agents, and let's be sure to put out videos of them training with all of their guns and weapons. And actually, as I showed earlier tonight, them practicing not only handcuffing, but using waist chains and leg chains, irons. Let's show all that video footage. And let's put out bulletins by the Department of Homeland Security saying if you question the election, you might be a domestic terrorist. Department of Homeland Security in 2009 under Obama, said if you believe in end-time Bible prophecy, concerned about the border, a veteran, you might be a potential terrorist. All of these things are meant to scare people to comply. So they're not dead bodies hanging in a tree, but you're saying these are all the figurative dead bodies hanging in a tree telling you, sit down, be quiet, comply.
Exactly right. You're spot on. And it's those things that wear us down. So, if anything, I call them the communist strategists. You could call them globalist strategists, communist, socialist strategists. Essentially, they're all trying to play God. And you look at what they're trying to do. So, these strategists, they have learned through these hundreds of years of bloody battles and violence. They have murdered more people than any of our wars, and they've never been held accountable for their crimes. So they've learned that you can't just leave a whole mess of bodies on the ground. They've learned that violence needs to sort of be put to the side, and they need to come in quietly through our institutions. They need to come through the mainstream media and use that as the mouthpiece. They are very, very good.
You were
They are
you
experts in propaganda.
you didn't hear the opening of my show tonight, did you?
I did not. I
No,
came on a bit late.
no, that's fine. Because I was talking about the long march through the institutions, Antonio Gramsci, the Italian communist, and I was talking about the Frankfurt School and their long march to the institutions that they got from Antonio. And now here you're using the same wording. This is the long march through the institutions.
It's exactly right. And so they have got control of our educators primarily. In Australia, I went to art school, and in art school, I was indoctrinated with socialist ideology. I didn't know at the time, but it pulled me away from my faith. And it was only once I got out of the college was I able to re-engage. And it's this concept that makes you think you are better than others. It makes you think that you can be the creator, right? It make you feel special. Especially they target intellectuals. They target creative people and intellectuals. And that's why, people say to me, why is it this, these smart people in suits and that they fall for this socialist ideology?
It feeds their pride.
Oftentimes,
It feeds their pride if they think they can be the
yes.
creator. Reminds me of Noah Yuval Harari saying, we will be the creators. We will be the creators of intelligent design, not the God above the cloud, but the God in the clouds, the Apple cloud, the Microsoft cloud, whatever. We'll be the ones that are creating. I mean, it feeds their pride. It's kind of like Satan said in Isaiah five times, I will, I will, I will, I will, I will be like God, right? And it fe this feeds their pride and the intellectuals. For so many of them, that's why they reject religion. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine not too long ago, very close friend of mine, very, very intelligent, one of the smartest people I know. And I was talking to him about faith and about God, and that we don't have to fear death. For those of us that know Christ as our personal Lord and Savior, we don't have to fear death, that God provided the provision and the way for the payment of our sins. And my friend, who is very, very smart, began to, he thanked me, first of all, for he was very respectful. He said, thank you for sharing that with me. But he said, I have two options. Either we die and that's it, or he said, I die and there's a very just God. And I said, well, I can tell you the latter. And the fact that you say that is very telling, because if we die and there is a very just God, and we haven't received full forgiveness through Christ alone, that's a scary thing, as one preacher said, to fall into the hands of an angry God. But what the point I'm making is to agree with you. I find very, very, very smart people, they really have to work hard to finally come to the point where they humble themselves and they realize, I can't save myself. I am not the captain of my own soul, my own destiny. But I see it so often. Even on the left and on the right, you'd have to agree, it's on the right too, isn't it?
It is because we have a common humanity, and that's what it comes down to. It doesn't matter which b political choices we have or opinions, those things, it's that diversity that makes us wonderful. And we forget that as human beings, we are walking, talking miracles. Just there is no science that can fully explain the operations of our human bodies, the childbirth, the birth of a conception of a human being, the brilliance of each of our brains, no matter how many PhDs or zero
Absolutely.
PhDs. no one can explain that. And science, they have not been able to prove that to me either. So, you know, there is so much evidence of intelligent design.
Absolutely.
Even for those who are not full believers in God, there is so much proof of
which is why a lot of these evolutionists are now saying, well, I'm not an evolutionist. Now I believe in intelligent design. They're not ready to say in the beginning God created, but they've gone from saying, look, the laws of the universe don't fit. They don't fit with what evolutionists are telling us, you know, irreductible complexity like you're discussing, or the laws of thermodynamics, energy being used up and not replaced. It means the world had to have a beginning, like a watch. It was wound up. It's running down. They start to realize all of these laws don't fit, and they do contradict the known laws of science. And now they've gone from, I'm an evolutionist, to, okay, I'm into intelligent design. So they're coming our way, aren't they?
It's great. I think people are... It is, as you mentioned earlier, that getting that sense of humility. There has to be, for anyone of faith, you know that you have that humility before God. You know that there is a creator and that you came from somewhere, and that gives your life meaning. And so for people who don't have meaning, they're searching for it, and aren't we all searching for it? So I can totally respect their search. But when there's oppressive governments that want to put God, basically put God out of the picture or below them, that's when, as humans, we start to lose our dignity, and we start to, even our humilities just move to being humble before some government, which then, yes, we start to fear these IRS agents. We start to fear these our institutions, and we start to fear speaking our mind and start to fear our own diversity and start to think, well, I better not say anything because that might be dangerous.
I saw an article today in a poll on self-censorship and how it's rising.
That's exactly how they do it. My latest studies were on China, and I saw my father was born and raised in China, a young Russian boy, because his family had to escape communism in Soviet Russia. He grew up in China with his siblings. And then when the Great Famine, which was certainly not great in any way, it was the worst environmental disaster in history, killing up to 45 million people. Yet they call it great, of course, a communist euphemism. When he escaped, they left, and they managed to survive. But he told me that they didn't have much food, and that was basically all he said. But now China's had 70 years plus under communism, and this ideology warps a person to such a degree. And I've interviewed more than 100 survivors, and both people from officials, the officialdom, the ones who carried out torture and persecution against others, and also people who were victims of that. And they were essentially all victims of this communist ideology that took over their nation, now controls it as a total monopoly. And if we want to see the worst that could happen here, look at China. That is the worst case. That's the best example of the worst that could happen. And we can see it.
You're talking
and
social
we can
credit
see correlations
scores?
Right here.
Like social credit scores, which they have in China, that's coming here. Shutting down dissent,
and the,
punishing dissent.
Security, surveillance and security. Even their lockdowns being so extreme. But there's the psychology behind it is, to me, is something that is so important, because it's actually a strength that we can use individually. But the psychology behind the ideology is that they make everyone feel helpless. They make them become a robot, essentially, where all they can do is just spend money, make money, and that's all that matters is money, because they've been forced to be devoid of faith. But that's our strength, is that when we can see through the propaganda, when we can see through the lies, we can actually find our own inner strength and have that moral courage to say no. And that's what differentiates us, because we have known in this country, we have known something other than communism. Whereas in China, they've had 70 years, almost 75 years. And these generations have grown up not knowing anything else. No voting, no two-party system, a single monopoly. And they have been taught to believe that the Communist Party is their mother. And they love it as their mother. There was a woman that I interviewed they've been taught not only to love it as their mother, but that the country cannot exist without it, which is absolutely ridiculous. But they believe these ridiculous sort of terms because that's what they've grown up with. And this one woman that translated for me in one of my interviews with a former Chinese Communist Party official, she came out of a two-hour interview and she was so shaken. She was a Chinese woman living in Australia for a few decades, thought herself a free woman. She realized how much that ideology had penetrated her and how much she still had to dig out because she'd been brainwashed as a child in China. And when she was translating the term Chinese Communist Party, she said, "Kay, I felt this warmth in my heart as if I was talking about my dear mother."
Mm.
And she said, "That's what I've been taught since I was a child. And only now do I recognize that that is not me. And I hate it. I hate it that I feel that way. I feel this love for the party that's been pushed into her. And even though she knows the crimes and she wants to be free, she has to dig that out of her."
Wow.
So those of us who have grown up from a free country, like my family, it was different. They knew a country before communism. In China, they don't. And our youths these days, if they are only... once they start to be taken completely away from family and that core unit of society, family and the faith within that family, then they start to become just products of the state.
I saw an article today and a poll today. One third of America's young people have no issue with socialism/communism. They want to give it a try. Here in America.
Yes.
Here in America.
That's how I was. That's how I was 20 years ago in college.
Let's give it a try.
I thought the same way, exactly the same way.
You mentioned China quite a bit and the Chinese Communist Revolution of 1949. I don't know if you've had a chance in your research to study Edward Hunter, but Edward Hunter, of course, wrote a series of books on brainwashing. He's the one that is said that coined the phrase brainwashing, Homer washing. And the Chinese word heartwashing became brainwashing. But it's funny what you said, because it's right on, that without faith, you know, these people have nothing then to root themselves into, ground themselves into, and to persevere. They just kind of go along with the herd. We even saw that with a study done by Dr. William E. Mayer, who studied prisoners of war in the North Korean War, our American POWs. And Edward Hunter and William E. Mayer did independent studies. Both of them came to the same conclusion that the men, the over 1,000 men that were studied who came back from the Korean War were POWs of the communists. Almost to a man, the one reason they survived is they had strong convictions. They knew what they believed and why they believed it. And number two, they had faith. And do you know that I've had the opportunity now in the last 6 months, well, I should say last year, to interview three different men held in the Hanoi Hilton in Vietnam, one of the most brutal prisons. And do you know that all three of those men say the same thing? They knew what they believed, why they believed it. They were educated enough in American civics and civic life, and they were strong men of faith. So we know what you're saying to be true. History bears it out to people that were POWs in the communist camps, those who knew what they believed and had strong faith, and those who didn't know what they believed and couldn't refute the lies. Because as I reveal in my documentary, you don't know, I produced a documentary called Brainwashed America. And you can watch the first 2 hours for free at brainwashedthemovie.com. Joshua Phillips, if you know Joshua Phillips from Epic Times, he and I are we were just together at CPAC, and we're communicating a lot about a similar project he's working on. But you can watch the first 2 hours of my documentary, Brainwashed America, at brainwashedthemovie.com. And I'm working on part two right now. And what part of this documentary reveals is that when these guys went into those POW camps in North Korea, they were actually put in rows and taught in a classroom-style setting. And the curriculum they were going through was written by communists at the Jefferson's Communist School in New York City. So here they are sitting in a classroom for hours by the communists being trained, and they didn't learn enough in the 1940s in school. And here they are in the 1950s in a POW prison camp of the Chinese. They can't stand up. They and 38% became so disillusioned. So disillusioned, 38%. They willed themselves to die. They'd pull the blanket over their head and be dead in 4 days. Our government had never seen a death rate like that in modern military times in American history. They did not know what caused it. And when the study was done, they gave birth to the military code of conduct, and everybody had to memorize it.
Yes, that's so powerful. I've read Edward Hunter's work, and there's also another psychiatrist from who did studies during World War II, Dr. Joost Mierlo. And so his work, I think the information you're giving is critically important right now, because we need to know how we can protect ourselves, because we can. And the way that the U.S. has learned through these studies and through these learning from World War II and the Korean War, and how communist brainwashing works, we have that ability. So as much as the communists have honed their skills in a very precise way over these decades, we also are able to do that too. And that is what's fundamentally important. And so there's the faith aspect. There has to be to survive those camps, someone has to have faith. They have to have someone that on this earth. So faith can be outside of this earth, but there has to be someone on this earth that needs them. And that's where the family element comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So having the studies also showed that people with strong family ties were able to withstand brainwashing. And if you think about that, how many of us might try a little bit harder with our family relations if we knew that that could protect us and them from brainwashing? And the third element, another aspect to that, was that the person being victimized by brainwashing needed to have some understanding about why they were being persecuted, why they were being attacked. If they had absolutely no understanding, if it was so irrational, they generally would break down very, very quickly. And I think, and we need to remember that these brainwashing techniques have been in place for a long time, and
yes,
they've honed them very precisely.
Indeed they have. Now, where can people find out more? You're very articulate. I want to get a hold of some of your work and your writings, because I know you've worked with Epoch Times and who else? NDT, what is NDT?
Oh, NTD Television is the sister television network for Epoch Times.
Okay.
And so I did a show with them last year called Life and Times. And I am an independent filmmaker. I've been working in production for 25 years, making educational nonfiction work. And so I've turned that work now, I've turned that lens over to my own family's life and what's going on here in America. And I've used the China example in my last documentary called Finding Courage and my book called Who Are China's Walking Dead.
Okay, who are China's interviews. Walking Dead? Who are China's Walking Dead? Why did you title it that?
I interviewed former Chinese officials, and they, in one of the interviews, he said, this was a very high-level profile former chief minister from the Ministry of Public Security in Beijing, and he said, "We are walking flesh." And I said to the translator, "Hold on, I don't understand. What's he talking about?" And she said, "Walking corpses, walking flesh, soulless bodies. Are you getting it, Kay?" she said. And I said, "I don't like this, but can we call it walking dead?" She says, "Yeah, that's a fair translation." And so I didn't like that term at all. I'm a journalist. I had to go further. So when I interviewed the next person who ran not just one labor camp, but multiple labor camps in China, and a judge and a former army colonel and a propaganda department official. And I went through many interviewees. And so I just asked them, "Have you heard of this term, walking dead?" "Oh, yes, 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 yes. Of course. Yeah, we know that term. Yeah, that's what they said 50 years ago we would become. And look at us now." And so I didn't like that term, but this is the reality. This is what socialism does to the soul.
And this is a documentary by you called Who Are China's Walking Dead? And you're saying you interviewed these folks. Where did you interview them? Where did you go over there?
This is a book, and these are former Chinese officials. And I had to travel to five countries to find those willing to talk to me and those willing to go on camera, because many of them, they just felt so helpless and hopeless. And they just thought, also they looked at me and they said, white woman, Caucasian, she is never going to understand our world. But then I told them, look, I've been in a Chinese prison. My father grew up under communism in China. My family escaped it in Russia and also in the former Czechoslovakia, where my husband was born and raised and had to escape from in the 1980s before the Berlin Wall fell. I said, give me a try. And they did. And I was able to get their trust. And but the way they speak, using terms like that, walking dead, two layers of skin, they use all these euphemisms, and they have this cultural context which is rooted in communist ideology. So to put that in, people said to me, please put it into a movie. And I said, you will not understand it if I put it in a movie, or you'll fall asleep. So I said, let me put it into a book, and let me tell it to you in a story form, so that you can pick up any chapter in my book, and you can just pick it up and you can read any chapter.
Well, I'm going to order it. I'm going to order it and read it and have you back. I want to order it, read it, and have you back, because I think we're on a lot of the same tracks. When you say they call themselves the Walking Dead, do they mean that they're just absolutely hopeless? What do they mean by that? That they're enslaved? They're in bondage? What do they mean by what do they mean by I'm Walking Dead?
Their lives have been destroyed to the point where they have had to go beyond self-censor. We're talking about self-censorship here in the US, but they have had to self-censor for years. And most of these officials are older people. They're not in their, I did interview some in their 30s, but majority were in their 50s, 60s, or 70s. Some in their 40s. I got all of them, but it was consistent that they had to separate their conscience from the reality of the world. And that takes a toll. So you either accept it and you just become consumed with whatever the party allows, consumerism, following the law, making a lot of money. You have to lose any sense of morality that you have, and you basically give that away. But you know, you will be a scapegoat for the party whenever they need you, because you pledge your life. You make an oath to pledge your life to the party. And that means that if someone has to take the fall and it's you, you cannot complain. You take it, you will be sentenced to death, you'll be rounded up, you'll be disappeared, and there's nothing you can do. They know that. They know that very well. So, but then there's those who want to maintain some sense of self, some sense of conscience. And it's a real battle for them. And many of them, they said they had to leave China to do that. And some of them left, but then they went back to China because they were so used to the ideology of being told what to do all the time that when they came here, they didn't know how to.
It's like a prisoner who's been in prison for 20 years and they get out and they commit a crime to go back because they can't, they like the order and routine of the prison after 20 years. They can't make it on the outside.
Exactly. Exactly like that.
Give your website, will you, again?
It is my name, kayrubacek.com. That's KayRubacek.com.
And it's on the screen there. I'm going to get the book, read it, have you back on. Fascinating interview. Thank you so much, Kay.
I'd love that. Thank you, Brandon. Great talking with you.
You too. You can count on coming back. That's excellent. I'm going to get that ordered. Wow. So many fascinating people out there, aren't they? Aren't there? All right, folks, aren't you glad for this program? I mean, where would you hear this kind of information, these kind of interviews? Now, I'm going to go back tomorrow and deal with the anniversary that was on the 15th of the death of the dollar, the day Nixon closed the gold window. I didn't want to cut my interview with Kay short, so we'll do that tomorrow night, Lord willing. Hey, before we go, do you appreciate what we do here? If you do, let me tell you one way you can support us. Go to WVWFoundation.com. You can just go there, make a contribution. Our mission statement with our foundation is to use the technology and our shows, our broadcasts, my free documentaries, my Sunday night worldview class that I give every Sunday night, except for when I do have to take off, which was this last Sunday and this next Sunday. So it's very rare that I do that unless it's a holiday or something. But I had to work on this documentary all weekend if I'm going to have it out by this fall. And then I've got this Sunday night. We'll be at the live event with Mike Lindell. But if you appreciate my free Sunday night worldview class on Sunday nights. If you appreciate my free radio show that's heard on 60 Christian stations live every day for free, if you appreciate all that we do, then you might want to consider supporting my foundation, WVWFoundation.com, WVWFoundation.com. Our commitment and our mission statement is to proclaim the truth of the Christian worldview, to help people understand the times through the lens of a Christian worldview. If you appreciate that, our website is WVWFoundation.com. You make a contribution of any size. You also find our mailing address there if you prefer to support us through the mail. WVWFoundation.com, WVWFoundation.com. Thank you so much for watching. Till next time, I'm Brandon House. Take care.